Welcome everyone to Microsoft Ignite. It's good to see you, everyone. Although we cannot really see you with this virtual thing. It's good that everybody is in the session. And also, if anybody is watching the recording later, glad that you're looking at the recording. So this is the session that we're going to talk about conditional access, planning, implementing, and administrating conditional access. My name is Pieter van Leeuwen. The other handsome gentleman on screen is Stefan van der Wielen.
Hello.
And we have also our rockstar team of subject matter experts with Ben, Press, and Samantha online for you to answer all of your questions. So let's dive into this.
You said questions, so I got triggered. I just wanted to say, like, it says we're live. You can test if we're really live. Just drop questions on us. We love to hear from you and your questions. So please feel free to interact with us. Yeah,
definitely. So if you want to follow along, this is based on the MS Learn module. And if you want to follow along, go to aka.ms/LRN252. That's where you can find the session. You can follow along, or you can just watch the session and do it afterwards on your own pace. That's also fine. Like mentioned, we love to have this interactive, as interactive as possible. We have our moderators or our subject matter experts standing by for all of your questions. They have just warmed up their fingers, so give them a run for their money and ask a lot of questions. So what are we going to talk about today? So we're going to start off with a little part about security defaults, and then we're going to dive into the policies of conditional access, how to implement those policies, but perhaps just as important, how to test them and troubleshoot them.
That's important. Well,
you know,
we do have some nice real life examples around testing conditional access policies. So only for that you should stay on the session. It's gonna be fun.
We're gonna admit our failures.
Yeah, exactly.
And then a little bit on the application controls, session management stuff that you can do within conditional access, and something around smart lockout. Let's take 1 minute here.
Yeah.
And we did a big announcement yesterday, like passwordless is now GA. So let's take a minute of silence, a moment of silence to rethink the death of passwords here. Like, it's not part of this session.
And actually, my t-shirt isn't true anymore. You should enable passwordless, not MFA. You just need to go across that access step. And now I'm spoiling the silence. I cannot handle silence. so Pieter, just that moment of silence. Have a look at the window. We actually got a question what the weather is over here. So we're both in the Netherlands. So I'm wondering, is it also very foggy at your place? Because we're pretty close, but not like sitting next to each other. So
yeah, here it is. Although it is clearing up actually now for the last hour or so. Like nice. For an hour ago, my office is actually overlooking the water. I couldn't see the bridge. Right now, I can actually start seeing the bridge again, so it's opening up here. It's getting better.
That's good. I hope it's going to get a little bit sunny. I'm planning to go for a run later today, so that would be nice if I could run in the sun.
Now, let's up until that time, let's start talking about conditional access.
So, exactly.
Like we said, live or interaction. Ask as many questions as you want. For an introduction, like, if you have watched already a couple of the sessions on during Ignite, you will hear that we talk a lot about Zero Trust. So we're not going to talk about in detail about Zero Trust, but Zero Trust essentially is that trust no one. Like, every time then somebody comes in, you're going to check them. That's pretty much what we're doing with Zero Trust.
Never trust, always verify.
That's basically the most important sentence here. That's like the summary. And within the Zero Trust model, identity is one of the key items. Like, when somebody comes into your environment, you need to authenticate them, or when they're re-authenticating, you want to know that their security posture is not changed. So identity is a key component in there. And the part within Azure AD that's taking care of that Zero Trust is what we call conditional access. It's also the market term. Sometimes it is called secure adaptive access. But essentially, what we're gonna do there is that we are going to protect the access to your resources with strong authentication based on risk-based policies. So yep. that means that like, hey, we're not going to prompt you for MFA every time. We want to have it as a user-friendly solution. Like, we don't want to prompt you for every authentication or re-authentication, but only when it's necessary. And it needs to be configurable based on your environment, the resources that you're accessing. Like, hey, if I'm accessing the cafeteria menu, that's less risky than if I'm accessing like my Salesforce with all my sales data, for example. In it.
It depends what's on the menu today, if it's risky or not. But yeah.
Yeah, and, that's a different kind of risk.
and one thing I want to emphasize on this, on the whole story around Zero Trust networking, it's not one switch. And also conditional access being the number one feature of Azure AD, it's part of the story. It's bringing a lot together. It's part of the story, but there's so much more around it. So yeah, it's not just going into a portal and flipping a switch and you have enabled Zero Trust. Although there are actually scenarios where you could leverage a lot of protection and just going into the portal and flip a switch, right?
Yeah. That's very true. So if we look at what we do within Azure Active Directory, we have like something that we call security defaults. Security defaults, it's like conditional access baby brother, more or less. So what this will do, this will give you some options where you can quickly set up like your security posture. So it will provide you with some pre-configured settings so that everybody has a baseline against like password spray attacks, replay attacks, and that kind of stuff. It's a really easy easy thing. It's like you turn it on and the base policies are set. The only thing that you need to keep in mind, you cannot use it together with conditional access. It's an either or model. Now, these security defaults are already available to everyone. And with everyone, we mean like every licensing model. Like if you are using Azure AD free, you can also use security default. So if you have a tenant that was created on or after the 22nd of October 2019, then it is highly likely that it's already on by default in there.
Yeah, so everyone who's creating an Azure AD tenant right now, by default, this is on. And I think it would be good to have a look, like if we're talking about security default, when it's on, what do we mean with it's on, right? It is one switch, but there's a lot of technology behind it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take a look at those policies, like what we are actually turning on when we do that. So in essentially, we're going to look at four different areas with security default. So we are looking at multi-factor authentication registration. Like that's a nice tongue breaker. protecting your admins, protecting your users, and last but certainly not least, like blocking legacy authentication. And let's look at those four areas, what they are doing.
I love it that we're going to talk about enable MFA, and that's part of security defaults. It's totally matching my t-shirt today.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we not like that. We planned that or something.
This is what I'm wearing every day. This is like this is my working from home outfit. Enable MFA. Yep. I got seven of the same t-shirts, and I just wear the same every day just to create awareness.
But now with the working from home, you do wearing pants, right? Today.
I do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, just to be sure. Anyway. Unified multi-factor authentication registration. So what we are doing is that when you turn security defaults on, every user in your environment needs to register for MFA. And the registration for MFA with security defaults means that they will only have one option, is that they have to register the multi-factor authenticator app that we have. And they have 14 days to do that. If they don't register their MFA within those 14 days, they cannot sign in anymore. So they will be forced to register there.
And a few important points here. First of all, it's only the Microsoft Authenticator app that you can use with the security defaults. The second one is that grace period of 14 days only starts after the first sign-in. So it doesn't mean that if you create the user, they got 14 days and we will lock them out or they cannot sign in anymore until they register. They have 14 days after their first sign-in. So I think that's a very important thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's definitely an important one. And then the second thing that we're going to do is that we are going to look at your admins. Like, if I'm going into your environment, like, the one account that I would like to have is your global administrator account, because that basically gives me the keys to the kingdom.
Yes. So, my favorite role in Azure AD is that I can do everything. That's
it's making my life so easy.
But basically, never use that role in general. Just a really little side note. Always work on the least privileged piece. And I know there are like two or three things left that you need global administrator for. I even think it's going to be less. But our efforts here are to make sure that we have so many, that we have the right amount of roles available so that you don't need global administrator anymore. But this is about protecting administrators, which is good.
This is about protecting them, yeah. So when you turn on the security defaults, what will happen is that the 9 roles that you will see, that you see on the screen, like global admin, SharePoint admin, etc. If you are a member of one of those roles and you're signing in, you will have to do MFA every time. So that's one of the things that we do for the admins. Now everybody then stops thinking like, "Hey, I got my admins protected. Like I'm always peachy." But what you see in practice is that the most hackers or most attackers trying to come in via your regular users, because those, if you have some less tech savvy users, if you send them like a phishing link, they will just happily click it because, you know, hey, it sounds an interesting thing. So I just click it and see what happens. So
yeah, and also
is important.
Exactly, because I can give an example. It's a Dutch example, sorry, but I left out loud yesterday when a famous TV host in the Netherlands, her Twitter account got hacked because she wrote down the username and password of the Twitter account and just hang it in one of the dressing rooms where also guests would come, and just some teenagers, they wrote down the password and tried it a few weeks later and figured out that there was no MFA, enable MFA, and that it was still the same password. So they hacked the account. So I think this also proves that it's so important to protect all users.
Yeah, definitely. So what we're going to do from a protection perspective is that we are going to require the end user to do stronger authentication in certain situations. So that might be when they're accessing from a new device, or they're going to a new application for the first time, or when they're doing something critical, like within the environment. Then we are going to prompt them for stronger authentication. So it's not like with the admins that we're going to require them to do MFA every time. It's only in certain situations, because we don't want to have them prompted for MFA all the time. Like, that would be really annoying. And then the last thing that we're going to do is legacy authentication. Now, just to be sure what we mean with legacy authentication is that what we call legacy authentication is that you will have a client that's not using modern authentication, like if you have Office 2010. So modern authentication would be things like OpenID Connect or your OAuth, like modern protocols. Because the thing with these older protocols like IMAP, SMTP, POP3, you cannot do MFA on those protocols. So what we see in our environment is that the majority of the compromising sign-in attempts are actually coming to those legacy authentication protocols. So it is really important that you try to get rid of them. There is a bit of a warning, what you see in the bottom of the screen as well, before you're going to block legacy authentication, or in this case, enabling security defaults, make sure that your admins are not using any of the older authentication protocols. So don't lock them out by accident. That would be painful.
And we have reports and logging available to check to see if people are still using legacy authentication. And we're going to talk about that later. So there's a lot of insights there that you should look at before you're going to enable it, as Peter said, to make sure you're not going to lock out anyone. And we're also going to talk about locking yourself out later on this session.
Why? Did you do that? So with conditional access little baby brother, who is it for? So basically any organization that wants to get to a better security posture, but they don't know how or where to start. So even if you're using like the free tier of Azure AD, like security default will bring you to a better security posture. Like, it's a good place to start. However, if you have some more complex requirements on security, if you want to have more granularity, then conditional access will be the answer. conditional access will require you to have actually premium licenses. So the free tier cannot use conditional access. But if you are an Azure Active Directory premium customer, you're probably going to want to go to conditional access, although you will have to do a little bit more work with creating your policies. Like, it's not that you turn on something by default.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Peter, this is really, I have been waiting for this. And this, I think most of the people, you can just turn off after this one. This is the most exciting demo we're going to do during the whole session.
This is going to be, I've been praying to my demo gods.
I'm actually kind of jealous that you are going to do this demo.
I thought so.
Yeah, you picked who is doing which demo, and I totally understand you wanted to do this demo.
I wanted to do this because this one is great. Yeah. So I'm going to show you how you're going to turn on the security defaults. So you go to your portal.azure.com, going to look for Azure Active Directory. I'm going to show you a little trick after this. And that's how you get to the Azure Active Directory portal. Like, if you have worked with Azure AD before, you probably already know this route. Now, since we within the engineering team are also lazy, we don't want to do like a search and everything, or when you set up a new tenant that you can pin it. So what we actually did for you, instead of going to portal.azure.com, you can actually go to aad.portal.azure.com, because that will actually bring you directly in the Azure Active Directory portal.
I can tell you this URL hasn't been made up by our marketing department, because the official Azure AD abbreviation is Azure AD. It's not AAD. Actually, we had some few discussions around using the AAD abbreviation, but it's shorter. It's easier to remember, right?
So, it's easy, yeah. So that's...
And we are not marketing, so...
No, definitely not. I'm not going to go there. This is it, right? Anyway, security default. So how do you turn it on? So you go to Azure Active Directory, and you go to properties. And here at the bottom, you will see a nice link called Manage Security Defaults.
This is really the hardest part of the whole enabling
the whole thing.
Yeah. So when finding that link,
Manage Security Defaults, there will be a pop-up. For some reason, it's not showing, I think, on the streaming screen. Is that correct, or is that just on my end?
I don't see it on the streaming as well, but let's just continue.
Yeah, well... So when you have that pop-up, there is a, let me otherwise just go a bit for this and just make it a little bit to the side so that I can make sure that it's on the screen. So you'll have this this pop-up here. And the only thing that you need to do is that you set this to yes and press save. Like, it is as easy.
Woohoo! It's too bad we're not in front of a big audience, because I guess everyone would applaud this.
Everybody would be cheering right now, for sure.
Yeah.
So this is how you turn it on. Now, what will happen when you turn this on? It will set those policies that we just discussed. And the one thing what you will also notice, that if you are now trying to create a conditional access policy, we'll do a new policy. You'll get this warning here at the bottom, like, hey, it looks you're about to manage your organization security configuration. Like, that's great. But before you're going to do that, you need to disable security defaults. Otherwise, you cannot you cannot create conditional access policies. Turning it off is about just as complex as turning it on. You just go back to properties.
This is the complex part again, right? Finding the link.
Finding the link is the most complex part. That's true. And then just turn it to no, and then we're going to ask you, like, hey, we'd love to understand why you're disabling this. And then you just press, yeah, I'm going to use conditional access. Press save.
Awesome.
And that's it. That's how you turn it on and off. That's about it.
I think it's amazing. So this was our presentation. Thank you for... No. No, now we're going to go dive into the more fun stuff, right?
Yes.
The real conditional access piece. So before we continue, I just want to mention, feel free to drop your questions. Let us know. Ask us about the weather. ask us about conditional access. We already see a few questions pop in. And if your question isn't answered right away, Some questions I try to save for the moment that we're going to talk about that topic. So then definitely we will talk about your question. So please be interactive and check if we're still awake and still live by submitting questions. So let's dive into the conditional access part, right?
Yeah, let's go to conditional access policies.
Yeah, so the security defaults are cool, but I know of every IT pro, you wanna turn those knobs, you wanna do flexible stuff. So let's see what conditional access actually is. So we have a nice diagram which would show like how conditional access would work. And what I love about the name conditional access is that what it does is actually the name. And that's cool, right? Because it's giving you access based on a condition. And this is precisely what you see on the screen right now. We have those signals on the left side, which could be a user, a location, it could be the state of a device, it could be a particular application. And then the cool thing where we have that real-time risk. And this is real data coming from all Microsoft services. So it's not only enterprise services, it's also consumer services. So if I'm an attacker and I got hired to go into someone's Xbox account and steal a lot of gold. And if you can hear, I'm not a real gamer. talking about games, Peter and I, we do compete a bit in City Skylines, building the biggest city. And yeah, Peter, even though my city is, my city is called better than Peter's, but he won. So my city isn't too bad, but that information, so that attacker is trying to go into an Xbox account and we notice that and we share that information with our enterprise customers as well. So that means that if that same attacker now got hired to go into your enterprise environment, we already know about that. So that's data that's coming into conditional access.
And then just the amount of data, let's also
point.
Let's take a moment to stand still with the amount of data that we're using. Like we have so much signal within Microsoft. So it's not only coming from Azure AD, we're also using signal from Defender, from Cloud of Security, from Office, like everything, and the data crimes unit that we have within Microsoft, the digital crimes unit, sorry. Every signal, every bit of signal that we have is also used within conditional access. So we actually use a data set of 171 terabyte of data to make a decision on this.
Even my storage cannot handle that. So that's cool. And then taking those signals, and then we can say, what are we going to do? Are we going to allow access? Are we going to require MFA? Are we going to limit access? Do we need a password reset because maybe this account has been breached, or do we want to monitor access? So one of them that's not on the screen right now is block access, which is an action that you probably don't want to use that much, because what we're trying to do with conditional access and also the security defaults is based on that philosophy, is finding the balance between security and end user productivity. So finding that balance, protecting resources, but making sure you can do your job, that's the whole key thing here, and providing those controls.
And I think what's also very cool is that we have some integrations also with some of the other products that we do within Microsoft, like within limiting access, for example, to Microsoft Cloud Security. So there is some pretty cool integration there as well.
Definitely. So we had a question from the audience. How common are security defaults versus conditional access defaults? So I'm guessing like how common is it to use security defaults or conditional access? Well, I think if you look at security defaults, it's on by default there. So it's a great start, I think, for your enterprise. And if the controls that are in there, the default things that are in there are enough for your enterprise, then it's great to go with the security defaults. But what we see and Peter, correct me if I'm wrong, but most enterprises require some more flexibility, require some more controls, and that's where you move into conditional access.
Definitely, and also like you need to see the security defaults also as like it's a great place to start, like if you want to have some like instant protection.
Yep.
But most companies will require more granularity, more configurability of their policy, so that's when they need to move to conditional access. But like we've also said, like if you are using Azure AD free, or basically if you're not an Azure AD premium user, then you will have no choice and you will have to go for security defaults if you want to turn on security in your tenant.
Maybe good to have a look at those benefits of conditional access to see,
Yes.
like, why, what are the benefits? So, yeah, this is a little bit high over, of course, but in general, if you would look at this, first of all, that finding that balance between security and end-user productivity, it's all over this slide, right? It's increased productivity. So we don't want to annoy people with a lot of MFA prompts, because then there's going to be developers that are going to build an app to auto-approve MFA prompts on your phone. And this is a real thing that happened a year ago. There were apps in the Android store that would just auto-approve the notifications coming from the Authenticator app. And I think this totally proves what the vision and strategy we're following here with conditional access. And the same goes around managing cost. It's a cloud solution. It's there, but it's not only cloud. It's also covering on-premises pieces, and we're going to talk about that later. And it's your first step or part of the journey going into zero trust. I think that's a good one. And also from a compliance and governance perspective, you have audit capabilities, but also
yeah.
terms of use, I think it's kind of a hidden feature, right, within Azure, within yeah. Conditional Access.
And of course, what we see as well is like now in the last couple of years, especially when we're here in Europe, they started talking about GDPR, that governance is actually now a hot topic. Like a couple of years ago, people didn't really care about governance, but we see that more and more coming into like, yeah, I would almost say mainstream. Like people want to have governance because they need to prove that they are compliant. Because if something happens, like there are big fines and other things that can be addressed to a company, so they care about governance right now.
Definitely. So let's dive a little bit deeper into conditional access. Let's look at the components that are there. And I don't want to take too much time on this slide because I'm actually going to talk you through it during the demo. But as you said, conditional access, it's bringing the signals together, decisions, and enforcing the policies. And this is a quick view if you never have seen the portal. This is how it looks, how you would configure it. And as I said, I'm going to talk through all these options during the demo. So just a quick peek, but it's like conditions and then policies. So I can say this user cannot access this application, or this user from this location needs to do MFA to access this application. And that application can be any application connected to Azure AD as well.
So essentially, it's an if-then statement. Like, if this is met, then apply these controls.
Exactly.
Like it is basically that simple. But that's also a bit of the power of conditional access. And we have
it
done
is.
Now, yesterday, there was one of the nicest announcements that we also now do authentication context within conditional access. So perhaps you can talk a little bit or spend like a little bit of time on that, what that actually does and means for conditional access.
Sure. So I already told you with conditional access, you have like you can turn all the knobs and things and put protection on an application. And what you can do with auth context, authentication context, we love abbreviations, is that you can actually control access inside of applications. So I can have a document on SharePoint, which is confidential and would require me to only be, I can only access it from a specific device using multi-factor authentication. And that's what authentication context can offer. You can tag a specific document, and conditional access is aware of that tag and can, and you can, when you open the document, you probably need to do MFA or you need to be on a managed device, but all the other content can just be accessed from any device or has a less strict policy on it. So I think that it's pretty cool. And for now, it's on SharePoint. I think SharePoint and Teams, right, just at the top of my head. But we're looking into extending this to more applications and even your own applications that you develop yourself that you can use this technology with.
And let's take a look at how the flows work, because otherwise we have a tendency that we talk too much. So.
No, I wanted to say, talking about if-then statements, one important thing to remember with conditional access is when is conditional access applied and what is the rule of evaluation? And it was actually one of the questions that came from the audience. So first of all, one thing to keep in mind is that the strictest conditional access policy will apply to a user. That means if I have two policies which apply to the same user slash scenario, one of them would be MFA, the other one would be block, the user would be blocked. So that's one key thing to keep in mind. The other thing, which I think is very, very important to remember, is that we evaluate conditional access when we issue an access token. I don't want to dive into the whole token piece, but it basically means we evaluate conditional access when you try to access data, when an app tries to access an API, when at this part. So it could be that you sign into an application, there's no conditional access being applied, but then that application on behalf of you is going to get data from an API, which requires an access token. And at that point, we're going to look at conditional access, which also makes it very like flexible. I can sign into an app without MFA, and I need specific data from an API, and that would require MFA. So then I get like a step-up authentication piece.
And it's good, good to remember as well, like this happens with every authentication. Also, when you're re-authenticating, so if you're using your refresh token to get a new token, you will still go through the conditional access mechanism because maybe your security posture has changed in the meantime.
Yeah, exactly. And also keep in mind that the default behavior of conditional access is not like a firewall. It's allow, where in a firewall, you normally have like the rule 0 or 99.99, depending on your firewall configuration. It's just a block. Conditional access, it means allow. So when there's no assignment, if we would go to this flow, so if there's no user assigned, if there's no policy in scope, if access control conditions, block conditions are not satisfied, grant conditions, if there's no session controls, you get an access token. So basically what we first do, we look into is there a user assignment, and then we look at the other conditions. And what you will see soon in the demo is that if you go from top to bottom, that's also basically the way how we evaluate the conditional access policy to see if it applies to you. And then again, keep in mind two important things with conditional access. If there's no policy that applies to you, it's going to be an allow. We're going to give you that access token. The second one is that the strictest policy always wins. But we do have all kinds of reporting stuff. And I see Sebastian had a question around like conditional access, if he can roll back sessions, if some settings, if something does not work as expected. If you apply best practices, yes, you can. If you're not locking yourself out, you can. And I think that so set up an emergency access account is one of the best practices here. Have an account, a break glass account, that if anything goes wrong, if I would create a policy which would say block all users, I still have one user that can sign in and refer back that policy.
And that should be like an account that never is going to be used. Like this is like your only account that can bypass your security measures. You need to monitor it so that normally you won't use it. It is really only for emergency situations.
Exactly.
It is even though we have several warnings within the portal when you do, I would almost say, stupid things. we don't block you for doing these stupid things. So it's really good to have one of those accounts just handy.
Yeah. And then the report only mode, I'm going to show you that in a bit as well, is very, very key to this. Create your policy, first put it in report only mode. So it is being applied but not enforced. Check your logs to see what's happening and just monitor it for 1 or 2 weeks and see what's happening. And after that, if you're completely satisfied, then enable it. And then exclude countries from which you never expect to sign in, although monitor that. I have a firewall at home, and which is not conditional access, but talking about countries, I once decided that I didn't want any traffic coming from China, because what do I do within China? I never order stuff off of AliExpress, which actually is a lie, to be honest. But so I thought it would be fun to block China. And then I tried to put on my robot vacuum cleaner, and it didn't work anymore. And I couldn't figure it out. And then I was like, oh, wait. This thing comes from China and tries to communicate with China. So if you're going to exclude countries where you never expect the signing, double check if no one is signing from that country. Because again, you want to ensure that the users have that productivity.
Luckily, if that happens with conditional access, we will actually show you in the logs, but we will come to that a little bit later on.
Yeah, definitely. So Peter, if I have those security defaults where we talked about previously, if I have that on, and I what would be the impact to existing conditional access policies? Could there even be impact?
Well, no, because if you have conditional access policies already in your console and you try to enable security defaults, we will actually stop you for doing that because there can be conflicts between our security defaults policies and the conditional access policies that you have. So if you have conditional access policies, you cannot actually turn it on. It's similar to what we just showed in the console, that if you have security defaults turned on and you want to create a conditional access policy, we will just not allow you to create one unless you turn off security defaults.
Exactly. Thanks. So that was Vikrant's question. And then looking at common policies, and you would see some things here. We took some common policies and put them in security defaults. And that's basically how security defaults got created. So things like require MFA, respond to potential compromised accounts using identity protection, require a managed device, require approved client applications. And that's an interesting one where we're going to deep dive on later, because there is actually a question on approved client app and app protection support, but we're going to cover that later. And then I wouldn't say block access is a common policy. It is common to block legacy authentication. In all other cases, I would highly recommend to look into a different way to protect your data instead of blocking access, because blocking access is going to impact your productivity. And that's
definitely you don't want. And when you create any of these, make sure and exclude those break loss accounts. Possibly also, as at least during the testing phase, I would also exclude my administrators so that they can get in. But also very importantly, if you're doing Azure AD Connect, syncing your accounts from your on-premise AD into Azure AD, make sure that you also exclude your Azure AD Connect sync account, because otherwise your sync will actually stop. And like that happens to the best of us. I've done that myself.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. But so also, let's take a look at also on how to build and test those policies. Like what are the steps that we need to do?
And I think the first one is one that everyone forgets, right? You're gonna do like things you're gonna do stuff that impacts end users. You need to communicate that there's gonna be a change. Don't bore them with all the details, but tell them that this could be expected behavior. You could see an MFA prompt. You could maybe go into a read-only mode. Start with a small set of users and then expand that group. Exclude those break glass accounts, exclude those administrators, and ensure that someone still has access when you change a policy. I lock myself out. I lock myself out by not going up after those rules. And I can tell you there are 25 customers a week that lock themselves out according to our support cases. So.
We can get you in with support, but it's going to be a bit of a pain.
Yeah, definitely. And then I think if you look at testing, it's important to create test users a test plan. So we do have an example of a test plan,
Before we're going to take a look at that one, like the set of test users, what I would also recommend you to do. Take one of your C-level execs in there, or like one of your higher ranking execs in that set of test users. Like people are always afraid to do that because they think like if then stuff goes wrong, then I might get fired. But it's actually, explain to him what is going to happen, or him or her, explain to him what's going to happen, including then in the test policies. Because if then everything works as expected, you will have a very good a supporter within the organization to roll this out.
Yep, definitely. So,
and take a look at aka.ms/deployment plans, because that's also where you can find deployment plans on everything Azure AD.
Our team that works with the biggest customers across the world, they've created those plans together with the feature program managers that design the features. And it's really impactful. So these type of test plans come straight out of those deployment plans. End user communication is in those deployment plans. So if you're looking to deploy conditional access, go to aka.ms/deployment plans. And with a test plan, with every test plan, you want to write down what's the expected result and then have those people test and see if the expected result met the real result that is there. And of course, report only mode is a great way to start before you actually gonna apply those.
Also known as also known as the do not fire me mode.
Yeah, that was the internal name. I think Peter already covered a little bit of their license requirements. Conditional access, the difference with the security default is require a premium P1 license for the core functionality that is there. And P1 is also part of all the list of switch there. We're not licensing experts.
We're not licensing experts. So
it's one of the questions that always comes to mind. Talking about questions, Peter, let's do a knowledge check. Let's see if we're actually doing a good job by asking the audience a question.
So
there you go.
The question is, what does conditional access do? Is this going to be answer number A? Like the price is right. Is it? It is the component that enforces multi-factor authentication policies for access. Or is it number B? It analyzes signals such as user device and location to enforce organizational access policies. Or is it number C? It monitors and logs all access attempts.
I find this quite difficult because they're all very close to each other, don't you think?
They're very close. Do you think what would be number A?
I think maybe that's only part of it, right? It's not the whole.
The whole answer. Not the whole answer.
No.
It's basically the same with number C. Like
I was looking at that too.
It's doing some monitoring and logging, but it's like not the core thing of conditional access.
It's just part of it, right? So maybe.
Let's go for answer number B. Now
I'm gonna write down B. Let me get a bit. Yeah, B. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
I will cue the exciting music.
Do-do-do-do-do.
And it is number B.
There we go. Everyone who picked number B, this applause is for you. I'm talking about exciting stuff, Pierre. I think now it should be time we just talk about those access.
Yeah, like talk about how to implement this. And we need to go a little bit faster because we have already been talking too much. But yeah, let's look at how this works, how you implement it. And yeah, also keep asking the questions. We have the moderators for you. So, and they will pass on some of the questions to us as well. So ask as many questions as you like.
I suggest we just go quickly through the slides, and then I will just show it in a portal, which I think is way more exciting than showing it.
Yeah, so like this is pretty standard, but if you want to set up a policy, go to Azure Active Directory Security Conditional Access and press the new policy button. Like that's what it is on the screen. Then we will have the different categories around the sign-in risk. So every time that you sign in, so what's your basically we'll look at the session itself, like is that secure or not? We've also added the user risk in there. The user risk, by the way, if you want to do that, that is actually an Azure AD Premium P2 license that you need from the Azure AD Identity Protection module. So that's where we also look at the user risk and user risk that is not only signal from us, but it's calculated also with signal from Microsoft Defender for Identity, also known as Azure ATP in the past, and Microsoft Cloud Security. Security info registration, so user actions is now also something that we can do in a policy, but we will show you that as well.
Yep. And then block access by location. We already mentioned this.
We already mentioned this. The only thing that is, and that you will see on the screen, is that we have a preview now also for a new way of setting up those named locations. So that's And then compliant devices. So that's the integration that we do with Intune. So your device needs to be compliant. Maybe you need a PIN or you need device encryption or it cannot be jailbroken or rooted. And then we have the block access with the big warning, like misconfiguration of a block policy can lead to organizations being locked out of the Azure portal.
Which really happened. No, never happened to both of us.
So we talked about solutions, break loss accounts.
Reminder.
Just a reminder.
Yeah, make this. But if you use the deployment plans, this is all over there, part of the deployment plans. So you should be good when you use the deployment plans.
So just let's take a look at how that looks like in the policy, in the console.
In the console, real stuff now. So I went to aad.portal.azure.com because I like this. You get all the good stuff in one place. And then, as we already mentioned in the slides, I would go into Azure Active Directory, and go to security, which is over here on the bottom, and then click security, and over there, and let me just close this one, you will find conditional access, and that's what we're talking about, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a new policy. So clicking new policy over here will put me into the screen to create a new policy. And let's call it Ignite 2021. Version 1, because this is the first Ignite of this year, which is exciting. And then let's look at the assignment. So users and groups. So if we click this one, I can choose the assignment. So I can say none, which basically this policy will not apply to anyone, to any user of groups. I can select all users, and there you go. We actually added all of these messages to warn you to not lock yourself out. So I will select all users, but what I will do, I will exclude my own account. But what I can also do, I can exclude a specific role. So I can just make sure to exclude all global administrators, for example, which is pretty neat if you have like people joining and leaving and you have multiple accounts. Although global administrator, I would only assign that to a Break Class account and just use least privilege there. Users and groups. So I'm Kat. So I'm going to exclude myself from this policy. So what we're doing right now is that we include all users, so everyone in the tenant, and exclude myself. And then I'm going to look into the next step. So to what thing will this apply? So we have two things here, as we showed on the slide, cloud apps and user actions. Cloud apps are just all the apps connected to Azure AD. So I can select all apps, and there's the warning again, or I can select specific apps from a list. In this case, so I can select only Office 365 or anything that is connected to my tenant, including on-premises applications and also your own applications, of course, that you bring. Then I can also exclude apps. So I can just say include all apps and then exclude a specific set of apps that I only allow. And then user actions is a very important one. I love it how it's called user actions. It should be called user action at this point because there's only one. But it's future-proof with this name. And what we mean with register security information is basically the wizard you will go through when you're going to register yourself for multi-factor authentication and self-service password reset. This means that if I set up a new account and that user hasn't signed in yet but already leaked their credentials, the attacker can also register that account for multi-factor authentication. What we can do here is limit that registration to a specific location or specific device. So it could be only a managed and compliant device information we will get from Intune. So for this demo, I'm just going to be very annoying to an end user. And I'm just going to select the MyApps port. I'm not going to tell you yet what I'm going to do with it. And then we're going to go to conditions. And this is really the powerful piece, right? So we have the user risk and the sign-in risk, which basically means like user risk is the user itself. So is the password leaked? Did we find the password somewhere on the internet? And did we flag the user? Sign-in risk means, are you using a Tor browser? Is this an impossible travel? All those type of things are part of the sign-in risk. These two are part of the premium P2 license to use. These will leverage identity protection. We can focus on a specific device platform. So I can just focus this on Windows phones, for example. You probably want to put in block there as they're not supported anymore. So you probably don't want them on your network, but it is possible. Sorry. So let's not configure this one for this case. And then we have locations. So what we can do is we can include and exclude a specific location. So we can do just any location and then exclude a specific set of locations. And those locations can be a predefined set. So as you can see, I created a set for my home office. So I can only have access from my home office. But I can also choose the trusted IPs. And that's when I create a set of a location set. I can mark that one as trusted. And that will be part of that trusted IPs. I'm going to show you in a bit what's part of the Netherlands in this case. And then I can also choose, of course, to include that. We have the client apps, which basically means like, is it a browser? Is it a mobile app or a desktop client? And this is a check that we can do. And then we can also target legacy clients. So this is basically where you could create a policy only selecting legacy clients and then set an action, which is blocking. And this is how you would block legacy authentication. Device state is where we can check to see if a device is hybrid joined or marked as compliant. So the difference here is that marked as compliant basically means it's a device which is cloud only, managed by Intune, and we get information from Intune where you define a policy which we say what is compliant. And hybrid SUAB joined means that you have a device which is AD joined on-prem and you manage it with some other tool which would guarantee that it is compliant. Okay.
I mean, we have to speed it up a little bit because...
I'm looking at the time. So on the access control, I can do a block, I can do a grant, and with grant, I can require specific things, and then I can do an AND and an OR one for this one. So let's, for this one, select block, and then just put it on. And this basically means now that I'm going to block access to the My Apps portal for this specific user. Recommended practice, put it in report only mode. So this box goes from off, on, and report only, and first monitor to see what's happening. So I created the policy, and now the next time the user will sign in, they won't be blocked to access the My Apps portal, but we do see a log entry into our logs in Azure AD mentioning that that this user is blocked. And I think when we talk about that entry, that's a great place to start to test and troubleshoot those conditional access policies, right?
Yeah, that's a good segue to the next part, like testing, which is always recommendable to test something when you do this. So testing the policies. Basically, with great power comes great responsibility. Like that's the bottom line. You need to make sure that you have, even though it's a very flexible tool, you need to also be very careful because if you make a small mistake, you could have some very undesired results. So a couple of things that you don't want to do. So you don't want to set up a policy with all users and all cloud apps, and then, for example, to block access or require the device to be compliant. I have done that
right
once.
Right, Peter?
I was very stubborn. And I, even though I got the warning, I was like, oh, yeah, no, it's just for testing. So I just need to test it. And then I got a phone call. And I got signed out of my portal and could not sign back in again, which was a bit of annoying. But luckily, I had a device lying around somewhere. Or you could do one of the other things, like I require an app protection policy. Like maybe this creates a policy that you can actually not get into the Azure portal anymore. Similar thing, like for all users, all cloud apps, and like all device platforms, you don't want to do a block access because you will be locked out of your tenant completely.
Yep.
Now we do have some things on how that would look like, and I'm actually going to show you instead of the slides. I'm going to show you how it will look like for the end user. So
yeah. So this may. There you go. Let's have a look.
Yeah, so if I'm an end user, I can actually go into my portal, and I've got, in this case, this is one of mine. That's also a nice one. Conditional access, you can actually apply that to your on-premise applications as well if you use the application proxy. So I've got my user here, and I've got, I'm signed in via the Tor browser with this one. If you don't know the Tor browser, it will create an anonymous link via all kinds of different routings to your portal or to the location that you're going. So if I now try to sign in into this application, what will happen? Because I'm now suddenly a high-risk user because I'm coming in through an unsecure connection. And now I'm praying to the demo gods that it will speed up a little bit. Like when I tried this beforehand, it was like instantly, and now, right,
there, you go.
There it is. So this is what you see as an end user. Like, hey, you cannot sign into this right now. You know, that's already good to know, of course. but maybe I was expecting that I could sign in. So I'm going to call my help desk like, hey, I cannot sign in. Why is that? Now, this is going to be a bit hard to troubleshoot from a support desk because there is no initial details like what policy was applying. So what you can then ask the user to do, click on the more details, and you'll get this nice troubleshooting details. So it will tell you the request ID, correlation ID, timestamps, everything on what was happened. As an admin, I can then actually go into the portal. And let me go to my portal here. Not this one. This is the wrong portal. It is got too many portals. It's this one. So if I then go into my Azure Active Directory, and if I then go to conditional access, there are some stuff. There's some stuff that I can sign and look from here as well. So we have insights and reporting, which I will show you a bit later on to provide more details. But what you can also do, if you now look in the sign-in logs, you can add some filters in there. So right now, I'm just interested in filters from conditional access, and I want to see where it's failed. And when you apply those filters, you will actually get that information. And when you click on that, you will get that same request ID, same correlation ID. So you can actually map it to the session that the user was happening. You can then go to the conditional access portal and see what was applied, why it was failed. So if I actually click this, I will get a nice overview like, okay, the user matched, the application matched, but it was applied because this was a high-risk session. So you can quite easily see what was going wrong there.
And keep in mind that everything you see in the portal right now, if you don't like clicking, but you like PowerShell and scripting, we have APIs for this available as well. So everything we've done just clicking through the portal, there's an API for that as well.
Yeah, definitely. And if this was something that was not supposed to happen, we've also added a nice little feature, troubleshooting and support, where you can easily create a new support request. IDs, dates, everything is in there. So this is the stuff that people actually, or our supporters will actually ask you to do so, to deliver to them. And what you then can also do, and I've actually put this one up already a little bit earlier, we also have the insights and reporting. So this is also where the stuff for your report only mode ends up, where you can get way more insights in what is happening within the environment. So you get all kinds of nice pictures, nice graphs. And they take a little while to show, but there you get breakdowns on the conditional sign-ins. You can hover over them. So you get a lot of additional details on what's happening within your environment there as well.
Your CISO will love this. This is like...
It's beautiful pictures. They always love beautiful pictures.
And as long as everything's green, it's fine. So, yeah.
And it's really fine.
Awesome. Yeah, let's go into... Let's see if we can answer Barna's question on the application control piece as well. Yeah. So let's dive into that. So what is application controls? What does it do?
So application controls, essentially what we do there is that we will look, and right now a lot of people are also using their mobile devices. They are using that for like their personal life as well. With application controls, that's also a feature that we get for a true Intune, is that we can state like, hey, we're fine that you're accessing your Outlook, but you need to have a managed application from your device so that we're sure that if somebody is using that your Outlook and they accessing that corporate data, that we still have control over that data. We'll skip this one. So this is actually how this looks like. So you'll have your device. You'll have that managed application that's controlled by Intune. Within the application, we actually also now have a capability that we can do multi-identity. So you will have your corporate data and your personal data in the same application. You can switch between those with the difference that if I'm in my corporate identity, I get restrictions. If I'm a personal identity, I don't. So that's actually how that works. And it is offered by Intune. You can still manage the device with any other tool if you want, or not manage them at all. That's up to you.
Yeah. So basically an approved client app and app protection support. So app protection support means you can apply these protection policies to the app, where an approved client app, it doesn't necessarily have to have those app protection policies. It's just a specific client that they can use to access data. right?
So the important thing here is that we're going to protect your company data at the app level versus the device level. Like if I have a personal device that I don't manage, I don't know if there is a PIN code, for example, on the device or that it is encrypted. We can actually then start doing that on the application level.
Awesome. So let's have a look at session management, which I think is a thing a lot of people look into. So basically what we can do with session management, we can restrict the authentication session. So we can restrict resource access from an unmanaged shared device. We can restrict access to critical applications. We can also like restrict access to sensitive information. So one of the key things here as well is the user sign-in frequency that is part of that session management. And this basically means that what we can do here is define the time period before a user is asked to sign in again when they attempting to access a resource. It means like we can control the lifetime of the refresh token in this case. So this is all around the refresh token.
And it's good to know that like the default that we have is that is 90 days for the for the token. That might seems that we hear sometimes that like that's like a really long time. It is actually pretty okay because we actually do the checking if the user and the session is still secure when re-authentication happens. So it's not per se that you can always sign in for those 90 days. If we see risk, it is gonna change.
So you need to know that a refresh token is used to get a new access token. And if you remember from earlier, conditional access will be applied when you get a new access token. So that means an access token is normally valid for an hour. So every hour we will recheck to see if you can get a new access token or maybe the conditions have changed. Yeah. Also, those 90 days are a rolling window. That means that the refresh token will stay valid if you keep on using it during those 90 days. But if you're not using it for 90 days in a row, if you got so many days off and you go away from 90 days, then you need to re-authenticate. That is what's happening there.
Yeah, so basically this is more around controlling the amount of times that the end user actually has to do something to sign in versus that things happening in the background.
And one thing also to keep in mind is that this also influences MFA because part of that refresh token is a tick box that will say you did MFA during signing. As long as you get that refresh token that would have that tick box saying you did MFA, we see that you did MFA. So that means that you don't need to do MFA again unless there's a situation changing that requires you to get a new token. You could also manually revoke the refresh token as an administrator using PowerShell, and as an end user, you can do it in the MyApps portal. There's a button, sign me out everywhere, which will invalidate that token and requires you to sign in again. And this has all been done to make sure to find that productivity and security balance so that we're not going to prompt you for MFA all the time, but we're making sure you're still secure every time you get an access token. So to prevent people from building apps to auto-approve MFA prompts, basically.
Yeah, you don't want to annoy your users all the time because then security comes a bit of a non-existing thing because they will just approve those MFA requests without actually looking what is happening within the environment.
Yeah, and then there's an important thing to remember. If you have an Azure AD joint or hybrid Azure AD joint devices, when a user unlocks the device or sign in interactively, this will also satisfy the sign-in frequency policy as well as they, underwater, they get a special version of the refresh token, which has the same characteristics as the normal refresh token to get access token.
So yeah, let's take a look at an example. How that works, because this is a pretty good one to understand. Like if we have a user and you have say that he needs to sign in like every 1 hour, that if I'm a user and I sign in at midnight, I don't know why I would sign in at midnight, but it was in the example, and I start to work on a document that is stored on SharePoint Online, like if I work on the same document without any breaks for an hour, I will get prompted again at one, because that's based on the sign-in frequency requirement that we have set in the conditional access policy. If I'm that same user, so I start at midnight.
For some reason.
For some reason, Maybe I don't know. I can come up with reasons, but yeah, let's not go there. I work on a document, but like at 12:30, I'm gonna take a break. Maybe I'm a smoker. I need to smoke. I don't know. And I'm going to lock my device. I come back. I do a unlock of my device. That means that a new hour is going to be triggered. So my prompt for sign in is going to be at 1:45 instead of 1, because I had that 30-minute break in there.
So yeah. Cool. So another thing here, which you need to keep in mind, is persistence of browser session, which you can control with this policy. Basically means if you would click stay signed in, if I would close my browser windows, all of them, and then open them again, my token would be gone. And if I would press yes, the token would stay on my device, even though if I close my machine, if I reboot my machine, it will be there. So that's also a good thing to remember. And it is controllable through a conditional access policy if this is allowed, and how to set it to yes or no automatically for a user as well.
Yeah.
I think one thing, if you look at from a troubleshooting perspective, which is a great tool, is the what-if tool. The what-if tool is different from report only, because you can simulate basically any situation that is there. You can just fake IP addresses, device platforms. You can select a specific sign-in risk, a specific user and app, and see which conditional access will be applied.
Yeah. So it basically predicts the end result.
Exactly. This is on forehand, where report only is in the real world. So you probably want to start with this validation, then go into report only mode. And then when everything looks fine from a log perspective, you're going to enable that policy and you're done. You're in production.
Yeah. Cool. Let's take a look at it. But before we go there, I see that there's a question also from Menno on what we mean with the new way to create the named locations. That is actually a public preview. So if you go into the console, you'll get a prompt on top of the screen. Like, hey, do you want to use the new preview feature of how to set up named locations?
Yeah, so that's over here. And yeah, so there you can see, try it out. And here you can select, for example, country location, IP ranges, and you have way more advanced filtering. So if I look at this one that I created before, you will see that I selected a country. In this case, I selected the Netherlands. That means that every IP address from the Netherlands that we know will be part of this name policy.
Yeah. So that's the new preview. It's public preview. So if you want to try it out, it's just clicking that that banner that pops up, and then you can use that one.
Yep. Let's just quickly look into that session control. So we got them over here as part of the policy, and the sign-in frequency, I can configure it here. I can select hours or days and then configure it. And then the persistent browser session is that configuring that state. Let me just put something here. It's configuring that, like, you use if you want to stay signed in or not. So I can say yes or no. In this case, you see the warning, I need to select all apps to make this work. But it basically means like yes, no, or let the user decide in this case, if that is possible. So that's how that session control works.
Okay. Yeah, and then the last thing that we wanted to talk about today, that is smart lookouts. So let me get back to the PowerPoint presentation. So smart lookouts. So what we do essentially is that this is a method to keep the bad people out, as with everything. So what you will see, if somebody is trying to brute force into your environment, if there are several failed attempts to enter a password, we will do a lookout. So we can recognize those sign-ins when they if they come from a valid user, so that we can also then start treating them differently than one from an attacker. There is actually, and if you ever get to talk to one of our identity folks, there is actually a pretty cool example of an attack that was happening, and it was at in a school in the US, where they were trying to do some brute forcing into an account. And you can see in the graphs that we were actually blocking those attackers, but we were still authenticating the valid users. Now, this smart lookout is always on for our SRD customers. So there are some customization possibilities for if you are using SRD Premium. but it is on by default. So
can you give me a quick example how it works?
Quick example how
quick
it works.
Example. Let me
very quick example. Just
very quick example.
Let me switch to the console. A very quick example. We have still 5 minutes left, so we could actually do that. So smart lockouts. It's still all under security. If you go to then authentication methods, you will see something called password protection. Here is where we can do the configuration of our smart lockout policy. So this is the default. If within 1 minute we will have 10 failed attempts, well, we will actually lock you out. And there is something addition that we can do. We also can add a banned password list. So there is already a banned password list from us. So if you are trying to do a password 001, we will already block you because that's probably not the smartest password to use. But you can also add passwords that are specific for your company or the area that you're in. Like when you can run this also in a reporting mode, you see that here is in the bottom that in an audit mode or enforced. When we turn this on, when we develop the feature and turn this on within Microsoft, the most common password was something like Seahawks.
2018, I think. That was when we turned it up.
Within the environment of Microsoft. So yeah, we also have some of those. And those passwords will then be blocked, actually.
If you don't have any specific need to change these values, don't do it. Just leave them at these values, as these are values that are based on our recommended practices.
Yeah.
And also, if you look at... so we got a question earlier around conditional access and passwords. So basically, this is the front door, right? First the password, then we will check the conditional access policy, because first we need to know who you are before we can check that policy. Having said that, there are actually checks on the sign-in screen based on part of identity protection, which will look at your behavior as a user on that screen, how you're doing stuff. And also, I think the cool thing with Smart Lockout is that it can identify a real user or an attacker. So you're not going to, again, security, productivity. You're not going to bother the real user with an attacker trying to get into your account. But you do get a warning and you do get that protection that is there.
Yeah, definitely. And also, this is not only, and as you saw on the screen, we can actually now also bring those policies like the banned password list to your on-premise environment if you're in a hybrid environment. So that's also pretty cool.
Awesome. Let's summarize the stuff.
So
much stuff.
we have talked a lot, which is not uncommon for us, but we have talked a little bit today around the security defaults, like conditional access, little baby brother. We talked about the policies that you can set for conditional access and how that you can set that. We gave you some intros into testing and troubleshooting. So we talked about the read-only mode. We talked about the what-if tool that you can use to test your policies. We've shown you a little bit about the insights that you can get if you are you connect it to a log analytics workspace. Application controls came up, and lastly we talked about session management, so sign-in frequency, and also the smart lockout.
But what should I do next?
I do next now? Well, if you want to go through the module, go to aka.ms/LRN252. That's where you can find the whole module. That will guide you through to basically what we discussed today, plus some additional labs that there are in aka.ms/learnlive. That's where you can also find the rest of the Learn MS Learn sessions. And we will ask you to please complete the session evaluation. That should already be posted in the screen.
One thing I like about being virtual is that probably we're not going to get any feedback out about how cold or hot the room was. So let's see this how that goes.
If that's the feedback, that's up to you. There is also the Microsoft Ignite Cloud Skills Challenge. So sign up for that via the myignite.microsoft.com/learningzone. So you can earn a free Microsoft certification exam by completing those.
I would highly recommend
that. That's also cool. And that is actually, I think it's already out in public beta right now. I'm not entirely sure, but there is now also an Azure Active Directory certification. So we are at the brink of bringing that one live as well.
Yep.
And yeah, there is also the weekly Learn TV starting on March 15. So aka.ms/learnlive. And then, yeah.
Watch that is and it. Learn.
So yeah, watch and learn. We would like to thank everyone to have been joining us for the session.
Yep.
Yeah, we could go on for like another hour or so, but we just don't get
days.
The time. We could go on for days probably. Go to the aka.ms Learn Live, join us on the Learn TV, and we will hope to see you next time.
Have a great day. Thanks everyone for joining, and enable MFA or use passwordless, way better. Thanks
everyone. Bye bye.